Nebuchadnezzar's Curse, a short story by Christopher J. Weeks, narrated by Christopher J. Weeks, a Doorway production. Part 1. Meeting the Man. It never fails. Pudgy Amy and her high-pitched shrill woke me up again. Looking out my office window, I saw the neighborhood's ever-vigilant single mother of four wearing her signature greasy gray sweatshirt pulling an unwilling child down the sidewalk by his ear. Amy's angry hollering ruined my nice, drowsy afternoon daydream again. I'm convinced she could raise the dead with that voice. After stretching and rubbing my swollen eyes, outside, daylight was fading fast as the October sun lay shrouded behind a cover of heavy, gray flannel clouds. My eyelids were still so heavy. I needed to just go home. It was that last conversation I had with Lonely Tom Peters that wore me out. He was wondering if I, his all-knowing pastor, believed it was biblically wrong to get a New England Patriots helmet tattooed on his chest. I could always count on Tom when it came to trivial theological questions at just the wrong time. I told him, "Tom, it isn't a sin, but on a chest like yours, it should be." The phone in my pocket started buzzing. Shoot! I pulled the phone out of my pants pocket. A digital reminder told me that I had previously scheduled a 5:30 p.m. after-hours counseling session with a new visitor who had just started coming to our church. All that I had typed from my 5:30 time slot was, "Big Ugly, from Sunday." Some people would say, I am not the most compassionate pastor, but hey, for some odd reason, they still like me. And I was in a hurry when I wrote that down. Plus, I couldn't miss that face. The foyer conversation I had with him after last Sunday's sermon was a bit hazy. After preaching for almost 2 straight hours, my mind always turns to mush. In the pastoral trade, this is called the ambush. Someone from the exiting crowd jumps the poor, helpless pastor and demands that their urgent personal crisis be fixed at that moment. Over the years, I have learned to diffuse the anxious member in stride. Just smile. Look concerned, compliment them on an outfit they're wearing, and then promise to call them later in the week, taking down the number on my phone. As a pastor in a small town, making people feel good is my business. I'm pretty good at it, too. On that particular day, a smile and warm handshake was not enough. There was a disturbing heaviness hanging in the air. I could feel it. Something wicked this way comes. I first noticed the man lurking around the foyer shadows. As I was shaking hands with people leaving, this giant man was acting as skittish as a scared rabbit. It was quite comical the way he tried hard not to be noticed. It looked like he wanted to run as he paced back and forth, waiting for me to finish talking to Myrna. Poor old Myrna. She was a pitiful sight, so frail and alone. Normally, she was the picture of matriarchal steel, a true iron lady. Some would even say severe. And hers was always one of the leading voices in the church. Being part of the founding family that built the church, Myrna exerted enormous control over people with just a nod of approval or a look of disgust. In short, she had power. But on that day, Myrna seemed so terribly small and stooped. She stood in front of me, dabbing a moist, crisply pressed, monogrammed handkerchief at her wet cheeks. She was gripping tight to my hand with her perfectly manicured nails as she thanked me repeatedly. "Pastor Stu, you're such a blessing. If you didn't help me through this time, I wouldn't know what to do. I am not sure I can do this without Ed. I am not sure I want to do this. I feel so alone, living way out in the country. I need human contact." I was taken aback at her kindness. It always amazes me how a death of a loved one can change you so dramatically. and, in Myrna's case, so quickly. I just officiated her husband's funeral service the week before. The notes for his eulogy were still on my desk, waiting to be filed. The service itself was a minimally attended, hushed, closed coffin affair. The coroner told me the old farmer's death was brutal. It was believed that one of the bulls on his farm gored him to death. That was all he was allowed to tell me. I am sure this was not the way Myrna expected the love of her life to pass. The whole situation was extremely depressing. Thank you, Myrna. That's kind. I will check on you later this week. Bending over to give the frail woman a quick hug, I noticed Myrna held on with a surprisingly tight grip. I could tell her heart was really broken. Well, my dear, go home and get some rest. Wiping away another rolling tear, she limped slowly away. Turning back to say goodbye, she locked eyes for a moment with the giant furtive man in the corner. Her eyes widened with fear for a split second before she refocused her attention on me. Make sure you come by soon, Pastor. It's terribly lonely without Ed. The swarthy man waited until Myrna was out of sight before he approached. His red, bloodshot eyes were set deep under thick eyelids, bordered on the bottom by dark purple circles. You couldn't miss his slumped posture. Balling up his hands, they were buried deep in the pockets of his dirty, torn jeans. He looked wild. He avoided direct eye contact with me and reeked of urine and pungent, stale sweat. There was also an earthiness to him, even brutish. My cynical side made an immediate judgment. Oh, boy. Another homeless wanderer looking for gas money so he can get some booze. Jesus, I know. I'm supposed to love the least of these, but... In a low, raspy voice, the man said, Pastor, can I speak with you alone? Out of the corner of my eye, I saw my wife by the door, her arms crossed and eyebrows raised. I knew that look. I'd seen it 100 times. Especially after I just spent a long 5 hours at church preaching 2 sermons and talking with every lonely soul. Her wry smile meant, not now, buddy. Can't you quit being everyone's friend and pastor for 1 hour? She had often warned me, if you give every lonely soul an inch, they will be happy to take from you 1 long, grueling mile, or at least another 2 hours while your kids are waiting to eat lunch with the cousins. I knew she was right, but admittedly, I'm a bit of a people pleaser, and it is so hard for me to not make everyone, even the same 5 sad people, every Sunday feel cared for. Turning to the man in the kindest pastoral tone I could muster, I said, Do you mind if we set up a time to meet this week? I said it loud enough to let her know I was hurrying. Back in my office, my phone buzzed again. 15 more minutes until he gets here. All the other pastors and my secretary left to go home, so I waited alone in my office, sipping on lukewarm coffee. I called home to let my wife know the bad news. Renee, I will be home around 7. I forgot. I made an appointment with that strange guy in the foyer last Sunday, so keep dinner warm and tell the kids not to wait for me. I'll see you soon. I heard the exasperation in her tone. Don't be a hero. You can't fix all the world's problems. Just listen, pray, and get out of there as soon as you can. Renee knew how to cut to the chase with me. This was her way of telling me I can't save the world. I knew she was right. My church office sat at the end of an ill-lit hallway. An old furnace in the basement rattled the vents in the corner of my office as the heat choked its way up through the old ductwork. I hated being alone in that place, especially on a dark night. There were too many creaks and groans. Shadows grew thick, and corners hid secrets. I found myself wishing I would have gotten a name from this man. I like to stalk people on Facebook prior to my appointments to see if I can learn anything about them from their posts. It always amazes me how much people revealed about themselves online. What kind of music they like, friends they drink with, or even the partners they have just hooked up with. But with this strange man, I was flying blind. I knew nothing about him. And he probably wouldn't have a Facebook account anyway. There I sat, waiting in an old dark church, alone. Why did I want to be a pastor again? It was 5:25. I grabbed my cup of coffee and left the office to wait in the hallway so he wouldn't get confused about where to meet me. The long corridor was lined with a number of doors that led to various offices and meeting rooms scattered throughout the building. People often said our 53-year-old church had real character, but that night, it was just really creepy. Taking another sip of coffee, I noticed a tall, silhouetted figure standing by the front doorway. His shoulders were wide, his breathing heavy. And as he opened and walked through the door, I yelled to him, "Hey! Welcome! I'm all the way down the hall!" He moved slowly toward me, his black-booted feet landing heavy after each step. I held out a friendly hand to shake his. "Hi, I'm Pastor Stu. I'm sorry. I never caught your name." Keeping his hands in his pockets, the extraordinarily large, grubby, and rather crazed-looking man nodded and said, "Talon. My name is Talon. Are we alone?" Was his tone that of a hungry monster that was just getting ready to eat his meal, which was me, in private? Or was he being followed by someone who wanted him dead? It was hard to tell the difference. I decided to take the risk. I'm foolish that way. "Yeah, come on in and have a seat." Talon hesitated for a brief second before he walked through the door and plopped down on my red couch in the corner. I sat a few feet away from him behind my large oak desk. Instead of looking at me, he kept his gaze on the gray sky outside the window. I looked at him for a moment. The man was as wild as homemade deer jerky. His unruly hair hung loosely over a heavy, weather-worn jacket. A thick, patchy, brown stubble had grown on his long, thin face since Sunday. "So, Talon, what's up?" When I counsel, I like to break the ice with an upbeat but direct question. No beating around the bush. And plus, I wanted to get this meeting over with as soon as possible. He stood up quickly while still looking out the window. I couldn't tell if he was nervous or lost in his own thoughts. "I have a question for you. I've been reading a lot in the book of Daniel. What is your take on chapter 4, where Nebuchadnezzar's cursed by God? Do you believe a human can be turned into a beast? Would God actually judge someone for 7 years because of their pride? Is that really possible?" His question had a weightiness to it. This wasn't like a sophomoric seminary student coming to argue the finer points of theological speculation. No, he was fierce and urgent. Desperate. Taking a moment to answer precisely, I took a deep breath and said, "I'm not sure I could say exactly what happened. But I remember in my seminary class, one of my professors said this event in Daniel was often considered the first recorded case of lycanthropy. I had to ask him what that meant, and so he said it was the supernatural transformation of a man being turned into a wolf." Chuckling to myself, I continued. I laughed at my professor and said, "That was crazy. Sounded like Daniel was using a biblical metaphor to me." Talon looked quickly over at me with searching eyes, pleading for an answer I wasn't sure I could give. He wasn't laughing. "Go on. I'd like to hear more." "Well, my professor speculated that Nebuchadnezzar may have been so psychologically disturbed in his mind that he considered himself a beast. Living in his delusional world, he let his hair and fingernails grow and ate grass. Whatever it was, one thing is for sure. It was definitely God's judgment sent to humiliate him. Talon quickly replied, "You actually think God would do that? Turn a person into an animal? Why not? He turned Lot's wife into a pillar of salt, didn't he?" Talon scratched the back of his head, looking out at the window as he thought about what he just heard. I could tell he was growing impatient. "Pastor, I have one last question. Isn't it a sin to eat meat with blood still in it? If God curses a man by turning him into a beast, but instead of eating grass, he ends up devouring living animal flesh instead, wouldn't it still be a sin?" I was shocked by the turn in the conversation. "What do you mean?" I am really not sure how to answer that because in the story it only says he eats grass. Do you think there was more that I may be missing? With another pleading look, Talon continued, "If a person is out of their right mind because God cursed them, how can that same person still be held responsible for the things they may do as a beast? How can that be sin?" It was the first time I noticed it. For a brief second, he let his hand slip out of his pocket. It was all mangled with a thin red scar, like a deep scratch trying to heal, leading up his forearm to his elbow. And was that dried blood? I couldn't respond, but sat there thinking. The silence of the moment was awkward, and we both felt the tension. A small tear appeared, which he quickly wiped away. He slid his hand back into his pocket and got up to leave. "Well, I'm not sure anyone can really help me. Sorry to bother you, and thanks for your time, Pastor. It's getting late. I better go." My heart was strangely touched looking at this wild yet broken man. "Talon, you sure you're okay? And is that really all you wanted to know? I get the impression there is more to your question than you're letting on." He looked anxious to leave, so I stood up to meet him at the door. "I'm fine. Just curious is all." He stuffed his hands deeper in his pockets and nodded at me as he walked out of my office. I stepped out in the hallway to watch him leave. He had taken more than a dozen steps when he turned on his heel. With wide eyes, he said to me, "Where in the Bible does it say it's wrong to eat human flesh? Doesn't Jesus affirm it when he says, 'If anyone eats my flesh and drinks my blood?'" Again, I paused with my answer. His questions really caught me off guard. He seemed nervous, so he didn't wait long for my answer, but instead turned away and lumbered back down the hallway. I watched as his shadowy figure exited the church doors and dashed away under the cover of a misty night. Part 2. Cold Spaghetti. As I left the office, I noticed the air was bitingly cool. On the drive home, I couldn't stop thinking about the odd encounter. What was he hunting for? And what was up with that final question regarding cannibalism? Along with the image of that scarred hand, his line of questioning made my skin crawl. For a few brief seconds, a swollen full moon peeked out on the horizon between a thin shelf of passing clouds. A few minutes later, the sky became clear, and a rising harvest moon was so bright I didn't need headlights to see the road in front of me. It's finally home. Emotionally tapped out. I just wanted to eat and watch an episode of The Office to take my mind off the conversation that was knocking around in my weary skull. "So, how was your counseling session?" my wife asked as she cleaned up the dishes at the sink. Her attempt at conversation was more out of marital politeness than genuine interest. It was weird. Just plain weird. I was still lost in my thoughts as I slopped some of the clumpy spaghetti on my plate that she had left warming on the stove. I don't know why, but the guy was asking me about Nebuchadnezzar. We had an odd conversation. He actually wanted to know if it was possible for a man to be turned into a beast. Can you believe that? And then he started talking about eating human flesh and blood. What? That's just gross. My wife was only half listening to what I said. After being married to a pastor for over 20 years, you get used to bizarre encounters with crazy church people. Nothing surprised her anymore. On top of that, she had only enough energy to feed our 4 hungry kids and drive them all to their sports practices and school events that night. Odd conversation held no pressing interest for her this late in the evening. When she was finished loading the dishwasher, she wiped her hands on an old cloth rag and slipped away to the bedroom to read. The spaghetti was rock hard. As I scraped the pile of pasta down the food disposal, I could see the bright, full moon outside the small window over the sink. At that moment, a large shadow darted behind an oak tree on the side of my lawn. What was that? I wondered aloud. After leaning closer to the window to get a better look, I mumbled, it's probably nothing. I reassured myself, although I wasn't fully convinced. Long shadows cast from the full moon danced across the lawn. A tired mind plays many tricks. Suddenly, there was a loud bang as something thumped against the back door leading out from the kitchen. My heart caught in my throat. What in the world was that? I opened the door and noticed a small stone resting on the deck of the wooden porch. Who's there? I called out into the night. The shadow I spotted earlier stepped out from behind the tree. It stood large and menacing. I could make out pointed ears, a long snout, and an enormous heaving chest. The rest of the form was a blur, careful to stay shrouded in the darkness and not allow itself to be exposed fully to the moon's searching light. A slight growl rumbled, and I could just barely make out words. Holy water! Help me! I turned on the back patio lights to get a better view, but the voice from the shadow lashed out. This time it was much clearer and threatening. No! Keep the lights off! All I want is some holy water. I need holy water. I was puzzled at such a strange request, and I was scared spitless. I don't have any, and I'm not a priest. What do you want holy water for? It's only good for cleaning stains out from spilled communion wine on a nun's white habit, not your soul. I stopped for a second to wait for a response, but I heard nothing. So I continued, holy water's nothing but religious hocus pocus. Who are you anyway? And what do you want? The shadow stood stock still. Its breathing was fast, deep, and guttural. I could faintly see thin vapors of hot breath rise through the crisp night air as the hidden figure exhaled. Talon! Is that you? Talon! All the blood drained from my face as I recognized something familiar about the creature's arm. At the name of Talon, the shadow fled deep into the forest behind my house. I heard the sound of snapping twigs and dry leaves fade into the distance. The dark presence was gone. Just at that moment, I was startled by another noise that was in the kitchen with me. As I slowly turned, I realized that it was just my wife who snuck up behind me. Her voice almost caused my heart to stop when she asked, "Honey, what do you see out there?" Is it that stupid neighbor dog again? I hate that animal. Next time it gets off its chain, Mr. Westinghouse down the street promised to shoot it. I remain silent, listening for any more sounds from the mysterious shadow.
Stu, what is it? You seem spooked.
Nothing. It's nothing.
You're probably right. It's just the neighbor's dog.
Once again, I wasn't convinced. My wife was ready to head to bed, but I told her I was still hungry and was going to stay up a little longer. I purposely took my time in the kitchen, making a honey ham sandwich, snacking on some salty Lay's potato chips, and brewing a K-cup in my new Keurig machine. Thank God for modern appliances. I never needed one more. A good shot of caffeine would help me to stay awake and watch in case the shadow came back. Could it actually have been Talon? But how? I live far from the church. He wouldn't follow me all this way, would he? I didn't hear a car drive up. No man can make it that far and that quick on foot. Then what was it? Lieutenant Howard, the security team leader at our church and weekend ROTC warrior, suggested I protect myself last month. You never know who might be raving mad, wanting to take out some frustration on the pastor this week, especially if sin is ever mentioned from the pulpit. Now, I wish I had taken his advice. As I sat looking out the kitchen window, the night was growing late, and I was growing tired. I could barely keep my eyes open with my head slowly nodding down, but I knew I had to stay awake. The digital stove was nearing midnight, and I was spellbound by how the moon seemed to dangle like a ball on a string in the center of the star-speckled sky. How big and bright it shined. Under its soft glow, the shadows were not quite as long as they were earlier. The pale rays of the moon splashed an eerie blue hue on the grass, pavement, and stone. Staring for an hour into the dark woods makes for heavy eyelids, and mine eventually closed. Smash! Crash! Rip! No! A small woman shrieked, pleading in terror, "Please, no!" The horror was so vivid. I saw white fangs ripping into the loose, juicy flesh of a small pink arm. With sharp claws and inhuman strength, muscle and tendons were snapped from the victim's bone and joint. The smell of fresh meat soaked in salty blood set the crazed animal into a feeding frenzy. The frail human had no ability to fight off the raw power of the hungry beast. In no time, large red pools of blood formed on the old hardwood flooring, while the soft light from the moon spilled into the room, landing softly in the few remains of the mangled, dead body. My heart was pounding, and I jolted up with a scream, "What? Huh? Get away! Don't touch me again, you beast!"
"Honey, it's me. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. You fell asleep in the kitchen. You were swinging at something in your sleep. Come to bed."
My wife was leaning over me, guiding my arm to follow her out of the kitchen. Images of a brutal murder were still fresh in my mind. An animal? No, a beast like a man was ripping a person limb from limb. It seemed so real.
"Honey, did you hear screams? Did you see a monster? A wolf with fangs?"
"No, you were dreaming. Look how sweaty you are." Still overwhelmed by the vivid bloody images, I grew frantic and began to rave.
"Renee, I think that guy I met with today he's some kind of monster. Lycanthropy, that's it."
My wife looked puzzled. Her eyebrow was raised and arms crossed. "What are you talking about? Stu, you've been staring at the moon too long." Perhaps there was some truth to that, but it was all beginning to make perfect sense. The guy I met today, Talon, he is not what he appears to be. That is why he came in. That explains his interest in the book of Daniel.
and why he was so curious when it came to eating human flesh. I think he's a werewolf. My wife smiled as she pulled me up out of the chair. Now, I definitely know you need some sleep. I wouldn't mind it at all. If we have a werewolf coming to our church, we already have a bunch of smelly sheep attending. Laughing to herself, she looked at me with a devious smirk. Maybe a big bad wolf would be just the thing to get them out of the pew and start helping around the church a little. In fact, maybe you should invite him to our men's retreat next weekend. Could you imagine a man-eating wolf sitting around a campfire with a bunch of NRA rifle hunters? She started to laugh out loud. Honey, that is not funny. He may really be messed up. He wanted me to get him some holy water, for crying out loud. Holy water? What for? Maybe he's a Roman Catholic werewolf. Nah, he wouldn't be going to a Baptist church if that were the case. She laughed again. My wife really thought she was on a roll. This conversation was going nowhere fast. I walked away from her, brushed my teeth in our master bedroom, and then slipped into bed. Lying on my side, I was still able to look out the glass double doors leading out to the backyard. That night, I took upon myself the role of being an ever-vigilant werewolf watcher. But alas, I quickly drifted off to a dreamless sleep under the fading light of the fully lit moon. Part 3. A Farmhouse on a Hill. I had a theology professor who once said, "A good stiff cup of black coffee and a slice of crispy bacon kept the heresy you allowed the night before to be kept in check." And last night, my mind was carried away a little. A werewolf? Maybe I was losing it. But there remained a strange sensation that the dream I had was real, a genuine warning, and it involved a helpless old woman. I sipped my warming coffee, trying to keep the look on her terrified face out of my mind. Still, there was something familiar about that face. It was Myrna's! Slipping on my tan corduroy jacket, I grabbed my car keys and I noticed my hands were shaking. I'm acting paranoid. I tried to convince myself it was only a crazy dream. So trying to calm myself, I took a final swig of coffee and yelled to my wife, "See ya, honey. I'm going to check on old Myrna this morning." She liked it when I tried to take care of the widows, and Myrna was an especially fragile creature. Renee came out of the bedroom and said, "Okay, babe, and let me know how she's doing. Maybe we can have her over sometime for dinner, just to keep her company." "If she wants to, see you later." I left the house, slipped into my car, and headed off to Myrna's. Her farmhouse was a good 15 minutes out in the backcountry of our rural community. To get to her place, I had to take a winding, dirt road through a patchy forest of pines, up to the top of a hill overlooking a landscape of apple orchards and open fields that lay brown and bare after harvest. It was a beautiful place, but it was easy to see how she could feel so isolated and alone now that her husband had passed. Pulling up to her side door by the garage, the dry gravel crunched under my car tires. For some reason, I always loved that sound. Stepping out of my car, a warm breeze brushed against my face. Everything seemed normal. Even her blue Chevy Impala was newly washed and cleaned. Myrna was ever the stickler for things to be just right. Chiding myself, I chuckled at the thought that she might be in danger of attack by a werewolf, Talon. Renee was right. I was in desperate need of a vacation. Just then, I noticed the fenced area where Myrna's husband kept his favorite donkey and some baby goats was empty. The few times I visited, the donkey would instantly honk at me, wanting me to pay him some attention with a pat on the head or a crunchy carrot. But today, all was still and quiet, not a single animal in sight. Maybe taking care of all the livestock was too much for frail Myrna. I decided to look in the barn just to see if the animals were kept in the stalls. The morning breeze blew again, but this time it carried a gut-wrenching stench from the barn. I wanted to gag. The putrid smell was something of a mix of 1,000 rotten eggs, raw sewage, feces, and my grandma's stale perfume. Opening the door of the red barn, I saw something I was not prepared for. Half-eaten bodies of horses, severed legs of pigs, and the head of a goat were strewn across the barn floor in a sea of squirming maggots and blood. I quickly shut the door and lost the 2 pieces of bacon I just ate. Myrna! My dream was a real warning after all. That carnage could only be the work of a hideous monster. Was it true? Was it actually a werewolf? Like a shot, I ran to the door that led into the kitchen, and in my adrenaline-filled hysteria, I easily broke it down. Myrna! You in here? Myrna! I couldn't believe my eyes. Even though I just destroyed her door, there sat Myrna at the kitchen table, as calm as ever. Well, Pastor Stew, it's great to see you. Would you like to sit with me and have some coffee? And I made some cinnamon cake stuffed with breakfast meat. It's a new recipe I have been experimenting with. I bet you'll love it. She rose slowly, putting on an oven mitt to grab the hotcakes that were done baking in the oven. What a contrast! The welcoming fragrance of hot cinnamon almost made me forget the horror I saw seconds ago. Sit down, Pastor. You look like you're carrying the world on your shoulders. Let me get you some coffee. Myrna, are you all right? Has anyone or anything been bothering you out here? I'm fine. Why do you ask? I know I said that I was lonely when I was talking to you at the church, but I was scared that I wouldn't have any human company way up here on the hill. I'm much better now. In fact, I thought I would be a wreck with Ed being dead, but you know, I've never felt better. I was shocked. This didn't make any sense. Myrna, did you know that something attacked your animals in the barn? Did you hear any wild noises last night? I don't remember hearing anything, but I'm a heavy sleeper, Pastor. And don't worry about those animals. I couldn't take care of them anyway. She slowly poured me some coffee, wearing an unusually wide smile on her wrinkled face. Ed was the one who wanted them. I threatened him all the time about that noisy old donkey. I hated his early morning honking. I told Ed if he didn't quiet that animal, I would. She took a slow sip from her country blue mug of coffee, letting the steam from her coffee warm her face. I sat in stunned silence. My head was swimming. All of Ed's animals were freshly rotting in the barn. She didn't notice it, and she didn't seem scared at all. Fresh meat? Myrna held out a cinnamon bun to me with her bony white finger. Something was wrong with her fingernails. They were now exceptionally long and uncut. Myrna, do you know a man named Talon? He's a big man, wild hair, unshaven long face. Myrna put down her cake. Talon? Oh, yes, I know him. He works for Ed and me, but not anymore. That is for sure. A shade of rage came over her mostly soft-mannered face. I grabbed the pastry from her and asked with caution, not wanting to set her off, why do you say it like that? Did he cause you problems? You could say that, but not anymore. Talon is no longer welcome. She bit down on a cake. I love these cakes so much more now that I have put some of this tasty, salty meat in the middle. As I watched her eat the cinnamon cake, a small drip of blood escaped the side of her thin lips as she chewed. Instantly, I remembered the smell of fresh meat soaked in salty blood from my dream. I stood up, trying as much as I could to hide a nervous panic that was coming over me. Myrna, can I use your bathroom?
She was too caught up in the cinnamon meat cake to notice I left the table. The bathroom was around the back, and I had to find somewhere to think. I was no longer certain that Myrna was as defenseless as she seemed. I turned the gold knob on the bathroom door, tried to push the door open, but it wouldn't budge. Something was blocking it. I rammed my shoulder hard against it. A streak of blood stained the white flowered acrylic floor tile. I twisted my head into the partially open door. There on the floor lay the upper body of a dead man. I instantly recognized Talon. I couldn't miss that face. The big ugly. Something had ripped into his chest, leaving only an empty rib cage and soulless dead eyes. An army of flies crawled around the cavities of his body. An old barn cat was lapping some dried blood off the floor. Pain exploded across the back of my shoulders, and I heard a crazed Myrna shriek, "So, Pastor, snooping into my business, are you?" Talon was a bad employee, and with Ed gone, I no longer had a need for his service. I turned around and saw Myrna holding a bat. I twist back to face the door, and the bat again slammed down against my back with surprising force. I fell to the floor, slipping on the blood in the bathroom. Myrna lifted the bat again. I held out my arm and grabbed the bat from her. I scrambled past her and ran into the kitchen. "Myrna, why? Why is Talon dead?" Seeing that I had that bat firmly in my grasp, Myrna tried to remain calm and said, "He was getting nosy, especially after Ed's unfortunate death. I had him locked in the basement to hide my secret, but he fought me and got out. He ripped the keys out of my hand. I tried to stop him. He took my car to see you last night. He knew you would listen. A pastor must always listen. It was a full moon, and he feared for his life. I followed you home to make sure he didn't rat out my condition, and I found him hiding in your backyard. He knew I was chasing him, but you can't outrun a werewolf under a full moon. I grabbed him by the throat and made him drive us both back to the farmhouse." She moved closer, grabbing a knife off the counter. "I was also able to silence that irritating donkey, too. He makes for good meat filling in my cinnamon cakes, though." With both hands gripping the handle of the knife, Myrna tensed up an unnaturally massive bicep. It was then I noticed her two large, hairy arms. The curve of her back was coiled. She was ready to pounce. But it was her face that scared me the most. It took on a menacing snarl, revealing a row of white, sharp teeth with two large, fanged canines dripping. It began to dawn on me that I was no match for this woman, this beast. "Wait," I called out, stalling for time. She was small, but being just a morning away from full moon vigor, she was still lethal. "One question, Myrna. Why did you call out for holy water? What were you hoping would happen?" Myrna smiled and said, "Don't you know? You're a pastor. In Daniel, it says God drenched Nebuchadnezzar with the dew of heaven. I figured that is the only way to stop this curse. I hate the monster I've become. For 30 years, I had to endure the pull and pain of the full moon, the gnawing hunger for flesh, the isolation on this farm to conceal my identity. Holy water has to be my solution. It must be. What else could be meant by the dew of heaven?" As she was talking, a pot of water in a hot stove started boiling. It was within my reach. "Myrna, there is no such thing as holy water, but you never know. Maybe this water will work." Quickly, I grabbed the handle on the pot and threw the steaming water at Myrna's face. She shrieked and started rolling on the floor. Her whole body convulsed. The shock of the searing pain seemed only to quicken her transformation. The elongation of the bones in her legs and arms happened so fast that the skin around her elbows and knees started to rupture. The rest of her wrinkly skin tore as easily as an old canvas. Her spine twisted sideways in a large bent curve that caused an audible popping and snapping of each vertebrae. Myrna opened her mouth wide, her jaw and chin extending and cracking. Her neck snapped back, and she let out a long howl mixed with a still human scream. The sight was unbearable. This gentle petite lady that I thought I knew was a real life werewolf. Her small hands started to violently shake, fingers extending as though some unseen string was pulling them farther and farther out of joint, ending in sharp claws. The knife fell out of her hands, clanging on the tile kitchen floor. Myrna's eyes grew large and yellow. I could sense in them an animal's desperate cry for help. She was dying. With little remaining strength, Myrna, now a broken monster, fell limp to the floor. She let out a loud, guttural moan that ended in a whimper and slow, labored breath. I wanted to run, but the fantastic sight held me spellbound. As her strength diminished, the shadow of the beast shrunk back into its original, broken, and shattered human form, leaving on the floor the remains of the small, dying woman. "Pastor," Myrna said, barely audible, I've sinned greatly. As a younger woman in my marriage, I hated my husband's role as leader. I fought him at every turn, mocking him, belittling him, shaking my fist at God, blaming him for this useless, passive man I married. I will never forget the day I purposely humiliated Ed in front of his farmhands, spitting into his face and then screaming out loud for all to hear. As God is my witness, I cannot stomach such a weak and pathetic man in my life anymore. Tonight I'm leaving you, and I've hired a heartless lawyer that will suck you dry. Ed, I'm done with you. May God do with me as he wishes. Myrna's voice sounded as dry as sandpaper. She took another labored breath. Her eyes weak and pleading, she continued, "It was that very night God sent the monster. I was walking down the driveway to get the mail when I saw a large gray wolf standing at the edge of our pines. Those eyes, I will never forget the evil in those yellow eyes." It slowly circled the edge of the yard, getting ever closer. So after I pulled the mail from the box, I quickened my pace to get back inside the house as fast as I could. But the beast was too swift and strong. In no time, it was upon me, sinking its fangs deep in my throat. The wolf's saliva burnt like acid when it penetrated my wound. I felt a strange tingle before I passed out. Myrna closed her eyes, and a small glittering tear rolled down her bruised cheek onto the floor. I know God sent it. I know I was wrong for challenging my husband, and God provoking him to act, and act he did. I have been a monster for 30 years. Oh, how I have sinned. As I knelt down to hold her hand, I felt pity. Real pity. Myrna's own pride turned her into a real-life monster. My father once told me, sometimes our sin becomes us. It did for poor old Myrna. I will never forget Myrna's last words. "Can God forgive even a monster like me?" My heart melted, and with sincere compassion for her broken, ruined state, I said, "God's forgiveness never runs out. Christ died for all sins, even yours." And then I fell silent. That was all I could think of to say in that moment. A warm, soft smile lighted upon her face before she breathed her last. Life is stranger than people could ever imagine, and as a pastor, I am often allowed to see past the veil of the common and ordinary. A few days later, I conducted another minimally attended, hushed, closed coffin affair for Myrna, just like her husband, Ed. She was buried next to him at Idlewild Cemetery.
She asked for a small moon to be carved on her stone.